Welcome to the Jacob K. Javits Center, your continuing coverage of the New York International Auto Show on Be Terrific. We're an official media partner of the New York International Auto Show in 2016, something we're very proud of, 2 years in a row now. You are the Terrifics. You make Be Terrific special. Thank you so much for joining us wherever you're watching around the globe at Be Terrific TV on all social media. And you can reach out to us with email and feedback, connect@beterrific.com. Keep the positive feedback coming. We really appreciate it. Also, join our Slack chat, connect@beterrific.com. Send us an email saying you want to join the Slack chat. We'll send you an invite so you, us, and the rest of the Terrifics can talk in 24-hour real-time conversation and keep the conversation going. When we're on air, we'll read your questions and comments to our guests. All right, I'm so excited about this guest because this gentleman is very special. He builds very, very special automobiles. The founder of Koenigsegg is joining us. Christian, thank you so much for being on Be Terrific, for being here. Tell me about Koenigsegg. I mean, you started this car company, and it's fabulous. You make the most exotic supercars. And here's the thing. It's not something that's easy to do, right?
I would say no. It's kind of complicated in many ways, but it gets easier when you know what you're doing, I guess, which is a thing that happens over time, of course.
Sure. How did you start? How did you get the company started?
So basically, it was my childhood dream to build cars. I saw this Norwegian stop motion kind of puppet movie made in 1976 called Hinchcliffe Grand Prix. It was amazingly well made. It was about a bicycle repairman who built, kind of invented this crazy car to compete against the establishment on a Le Mans style race. It had a rocket engine in the rear, it had a 12 liter engine in the front and a radar system and the smokes, like a crazy home-built...
A rocket in the rear
and
a 12-cylinder engine is pretty insane.
I was so fascinated by this, and of course he won the race against all the big brands and everything, and I was about 6 years old and I walked out to cinemas with my father, the movie, and said, wow, that's what I want to do when I grow up. I want to build cars, and a sports car especially. I was imprinted from that age with a will and the desire to do this. So
I imagine you believe that if you put your mind to it, you can make anything happen.
Yeah, I mean, I started the car company 21 years ago when I was 22 years old.
That's amazing. That's crazy.
I know, but I started my first company when I was 19.
Okay.
Was doing some inventions and buying and selling some things to make some money, just to prove to myself I was an entrepreneur and could make money, but few years later, it had pretty good success, but I said to myself, what do I really want to do? Well, I want to build cars. That's my dream. So if I don't do it now, I'll never do it. So I just started. And one of the drivers was, for me, that I believe you can do anything. It doesn't matter what it is. As long as you truly believe in it and are willing to work for it and you don't budge, you just never give up, even if it's difficult. And I wanted to prove that to myself and everyone else. So I went into it knowing it was pretty much impossible. So it meant that I was prepared for anything. So of course it was super difficult and more difficult than I ever imagined. But going in with that kind of attitude makes it possible to take more or less anything, I guess.
Sure. But I mean, that's very inspirational, because the truth is, I believe you can do anything you set your mind to.
Right.
If you're passionate enough about it, if you work hard enough about it, and if you don't give up.
And if you're realistic about it. I mean, in my case, it was realistic that I knew it was impossible.
Right.
So then I wasn't surprised when it was impossible, and I just dealt with it.
Sure.
The impossibility of things. And in the end, it worked out.
So, I mean, were you a designer? Had you built cars or rebuilt cars at this point?
Well, I drew cars since I was six, and I built.
Well, I've drawn cars since I was six too, but they look like the Lincoln Continental or the Lincoln Town Car. It's a box.
I drew them with a mindset: I'm going to build cars as soon as I can. And I bought car magazines from my pocket money and read them like this. Look, this car is different there. Wonder why they did it like that, and why did they do it this way? Because I asked those questions to myself because I needed to know so I could build my own car. And then if you do that for like 15 years, and then I fiddled with motorcycles and tuned mopeds when I was a teenager and boats and this and that, I got into technical things. I never studied anything technical in school, but I didn't go to school very much. I mean, I started my company when I was 19.
Yeah.
So I I'm not an engineer by traditional training, but yeah, I know a little bit of this and that, I guess.
So what happens? You draw the first car, you draw it out, and then you have to figure out how to build it, and you got to figure out the engine and the power plant.
You have to figure out everything. I mean, nowadays we basically are the most vertically integrated car company there is, regardless of size, and most self-sufficient. We make our own engines. We design our own circuit boards for the engine management, for the transmission management, for the body management. We do all the software. We do all the 4G communication, the cloud. We design our own carbon wheels. We design our own brakes calipers. We design our own nuts and bolts. I mean, we're pretty crazy.
I like that.
Just because we can.
Yeah.
And because we're small and have low volume. So if we go to the big suppliers and ask, can you custom make this very complicated piece for us and we want to buy 20? So no. So then we do it ourselves.
Right.
And then we learned over time that we're really good at doing more or less whatever we throw at ourselves. And you get self-confident in that and you just keep on going.
You hold the claim to fame of being the fastest production vehicle.
Well, yeah, we've had the Guinness record for the fastest top speed of a car.
Yeah.
We believe that the one-to-one model is still probably the fastest on four wheels with a number plate on it or a license plate. The latest car, the Regera.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about this.
It only has one gear, and that gear
that
can
is
take,
go.
Yeah. Well, there's no shifting, and still it's direct drive from the combustion engine. It's an invention I came up with, and.
I like how you just glossed over it. It's an invention I came up with. It's not
it's,
that big.
It's actually just about removing things in the end, but in doing it a little bit different way. But we only have one gear, and we hit the rev limiter at 251 miles per hour. So if we would have another gear, we'd be even faster, as it's a 1,500 horsepower car. But we said to ourselves, 250 is enough. We're kind of limiting ourselves to
right.
that. But to us right now, it's like whoever gets to 250 first wins, not who gets a 280,
right?
Because we're going to do that anyway.
Right.
This is more like realistic, and the car is really good at it. And we're probably there 30% sooner than any other production car in the world, even the big famous brands.
Sure. Now, you've done something on the new car that's spectacular and kind of amazing and mind-blowing, and that is you have an electric engine that puts out about 700 horsepower. Is that correct?
And three electrical motors with a combined output of 720 horsepower. One for each rear wheel and one on the crank for torque fill, startup, and electrical generation. And then we have two electrical motors on the rear axle for reverse, torque vectoring, and again, torque fill and power.
Yeah.
So yeah, they combined, they have 720 horsepower. The combustion engine has 1,200. So if you
only 1,200.
Yeah, if you add those together, of course, you end up at like 1,900 horsepower or whatever. But they don't... As they're interconnected and locked together in RPM, the peaks of the electrical motors is not the same RPM as the power peak of the combustion engine. So the peaks don't stack up on top of each other. They sit next to each other over a rev range, which gives a combined peak of 1,500 horsepower, but enormously wide torque range with about, if I convert to foot-pounds, about 1,400 foot-pounds of torque. So we don't need gears. We can spin the wheels in the dry if we turn off all the helping systems. Even though we have fantastic grip, we can spin the tires from 0 to 150 miles per hour continuously.
Wow.
And we hit 250 miles per hour in just over 20 seconds, which is about 10 seconds or so faster than anything out there. So
basically you built the car you saw in the stop motion film when you were a child.
In a nutshell.
Yeah.
In a nutshell. Yeah.
Yeah. That's pretty impressive. I'm blown away by this. I've been a car guy my whole life. And I got to tell you, what you've done, you know, I don't need to tell you, is remarkable.
Well, thank you.
Have you driven a rocket ship yet?
No, I've not driven a rocket ship.
A fighter plane, a jet fighter?
I've been in a fighter jet as a passenger.
And how does this compare?
Well, I would put it like this. It was like 15 years ago I was a passenger in those acrobatic teams, you know, flying. As we were at the military base, they were there. So, and I remember saying to
you,
myself...
You traded them keys?
No, well, the guy said, so are you scared now? Scared? And we're pulling G's and going up and down through the clouds and looping and this and that. And I kind of felt my pulse. I'm not really scared or excited or anything. I said, this is not at all as scary as the first time driving your own built car over 200 miles per hour untested. That was kind of exciting.
Yeah.
This has been done like 100 times before. It's not something they did for the first time.
Yeah, so I kind of trust you. I feel like you know what you're doing.
Yeah. It was fun, G-forces and stuff like that. But
yeah, that's pretty cool. Yeah. So what is it like when you come to the New York International Auto Show? A lot of great cars have been debuted here over the years. Your car sits out here, and all these people go, oh, my God. And all this press goes, wow, look at that. What is that like for you?
It's humbling, and it's... yeah, I really appreciate it. It's a little bit difficult to take in. I don't think I ever built the cars to kind of be applauded. Yeah. I built them because I love technical challenges. I like to challenge myself. I want to prove it can be done, and I want the adrenaline rush of what they can do and so on. And this is all nice, but it's. I guess I just have a hard time absorbing it and enjoying all the accolades. It's. I don't know. It's nice. I'm not complaining. It's fantastic, but that's not why I do it.
Right.
Basically.
What about for you growing up? What was your favorite car?
My favorite car? Yeah, that's a very difficult question. I have a weakness for I guess a little bit off the beaten path cars like the. And the story behind the Tucker Torpedo and what it did and how different that was and the challenges, the establishment working against. I mean, I love that. And what the car was and how innovative it was. And the DeLorean was a failure in many ways, but I think it's just such a cool thing to go out and wash your car with, like, stainless, what do you call this?
Steel wool.
It's like crazy, right?
Yeah.
And so... cars that are maybe not necessarily cars in the traditional sense.
Right. Well, I mean, they were cool, though. They were very cool. Yeah. I love the Tucker Torpedo.
Yeah.
And, you know, I love the DeLorean. I mean, come on.
Right. It wasn't really a performance car, but it was very, very cool.
But it was cool. And the gull-wing doors, I mean, you know, I love the Mercedes, and now they had it.
Absolutely.
And I still lust after that car. What about the idea that these car companies failed? Did that ever scare you?
And that's the funny thing when I look at this, I like cars that fail, but no, I think it's I remember when I started out, I looked at a lot of like failed car companies to analyze why they failed.
Sure.
To try to learn from that, and yeah, I hope I did, and I think I did. But
you did. No, you've done great. Yeah. Talk about the challenges of putting together these three electric engines with a 1,200 horsepower motor.
The challenges, yeah. It's in one way fairly easy, but there's a lot of software.
Yeah.
And we have some amazing software geniuses in our company that are also kind of petrol heads. And we discuss, we dream, we talk, we test and feel. And it doesn't really feel like work when we're doing it. It's like an intuitive process of learning and changing and doing at the same time.
But it's not something most car companies have, and today maybe they're starting to, but certainly not in the past. This is a very revolutionary idea.
Oh yeah, I mean, and especially for a small car company to do the hardware, the electronic hardware, software, controllers, algorithms to control a complex system like that. But If you would look at it from that perspective, it could be daunting. But we're kind of a company; we just do things. We don't kind of think, oh, this is going to be difficult or too big. We're going to do it, and we just do it.
Your accountant must love that.
Yeah, they're happy that our financials are as acceptable as they are, I would say.
What about the people who told you no, you can't do this, you will not succeed?
Right. No. And of course there were plentiful in the beginning.
Yeah.
And I expected that. And if someone else like me would have said something similar, I would expect them to have the same treatment. So I didn't blame them. I mean, it is a natural thing to doubt.
Do you ever, like, so you meet a young entrepreneur who says, this is my idea and I want to tell you about it. What do you think? No matter what field it's in, do you ever say, I don't think that's a good idea? Or do you say, if that's your dream, follow? What do you tell them?
So I think... for sure, follow your dreams, but if they are as complex as mine, I mean, one thing, if you want to become an entrepreneur and set up like some kind of convenience store in a chain or fast food, something which you have a more or less a manual sort of how to do it, that's a different type of entrepreneurship than trying to do something super complex with huge established competitors that's been around for 100 years. So if you want to do something seemingly impossible like that, you really have to make up your mind that you can't fool yourself that it's going to be fun and easy. And just look at that side. And you have to understand there's a, underneath the tip of the iceberg, which you can see, there is the rest of the iceberg underneath, which you have no idea of. And you have to accept that going in and know about it, that it's there, but not knowing what it is.
Sure.
And to handle it along the way and probably sacrifice a lot of things that normal people take for granted in their lives. Time, leisure time, other hobbies, any type of finance left for anything else or whatever, you know, stressful time. So, and if they really think it's still worth it, then go ahead. But you need to understand that you have to sacrifice something.
Did you have investors when you started? Did you scrap it all together?
Not when we started. I got a little a loan from a technical development board in Sweden.
Okay.
It was like $150,000 equivalent. And I had scraped together a little bit from my first business.
Right.
But basically the money lasted for 1.5, 2 years. Then it was bread and water for a few years. But we still kept on going. And then finally we got some external investors in. Excellent. Like after 5, 6 years.
I was going to say, $150,000 seems like a lot of money to a lot of our viewers.
Right.
But it's not when you're creating a car
something
company.
Something doing like this is not a lot.
When you talk about this electric and gasoline engine, when you come to your team and say, this is my idea, how does that happen and how do you kind of present it where they then have to figure out how to implement it?
Well, they tried to talk me out of it and said, no one is asking for that. People like to shift. It's not what a sports car is. And so I know all of these things, but if you ask people before the iPhone came out, do you want a phone that's just a flat screen and nothing else? People would say no, right?
Right. That also takes pictures and it sends email and
this and that. Yeah, what do I need that for? Right? Whatever.
I got a computer. I don't need that.
Exactly. Whatever, right? But so I said, but this is what I want to do. I want to simplify and make it more efficient and take away components that weigh down the car that you're only using one gear at a time, the rest is just ballast. Take that out and fill it up with something that contains energy and that can drive me forward instead, and something that I can use all the time instead of only sometimes, meaning one gear at a time, and that's what I wanted to do. And fairly quickly they started supporting me and they started understanding it, simulating and seeing that it worked, and then we just ran and there was no more discussion.
And anybody can drive it.
Anyone can drive it. It's so easy to drive. It's easier than anything else.
Do you think that we'll see other car manufacturers start doing something like that, especially on cars like sedans?
I mean, if you take electrical cars, they're already there. They don't have gears, right?
Right.
But it's combustion engine cars that have gears. But they don't need to if you put some electrical motors in as well. And you still get that direct drive feel of, I mean, when you're in a gear, you're in direct drive in that gear, you're in direct drive in that gear, and the other gear, it just gets different gear ratios. So you get the feeling of the direct coupling between your foot and the wheel, which is nice, which is not what a CVT gives you, which is a rubber band effect. But it's just that you have this huge, enormous power and torque from zero all the way to 8,200 RPM. So you don't need gears. They're good for nothing. You can spin your tires at any speed up to 150 miles per hour with no gears.
Wow. So that's impressive. Do you?
And then anyway, you would be in seventh gear.
By the way, not only impressive, but a lot of fun. Yeah. I would enjoy that.
It is the last thing I think about when I drive the car. Oh, I want to change gears. Like, what I'm thinking about, do I dare to keep my foot down or not? Okay, I'm back off. Okay.
I like that.
It's like, that's what your mind
is. And I
want
to smoke the tires at like 80.
Yeah.
I think that would be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
What about the brakes and the wheels? How big are they?
So, not crazily big. I mean, the front wheels are, they're first of all, hollow carbon fiber, our own patented technology, very lightweight. The wheels. So the front wheels are 19-inch, 10-inch wide.
Okay.
Tires are 275, 3019, and Michelin Cup 2s, very good tires, custom made for the car. The rear wheels are 20-inch tall and 13-inch wide now, and 345, 30. Profile.
Wow. Then when you call Goodyear, what's that call go like? Hey, we'd like
this is Michelin.
Oh, Michelin. When you you might have said Michelin. I was just listening to the stats intensely.
Okay. Right.
When you call Michelin, how does that conversation go?
Well, we've been working with them since our first production car in 2002. So we started the collaboration at the end of the 90s. And that's the only tire brand we've ever had. And they like what we're doing. They see that our car treats their tires differently than other cars. We have much less tire wear due to our suspension geometries, and we can put much more power down through their tires without overheating them or wearing them out due to how we work the suspension, how we have less contact patch deviation during wheel motion due to very long wishbones, etc., etc. So they like how we challenge their technology, and they accept us even though we have very small volume. So that's why we even can get custom specific tires.
That's
made.
Pretty amazing. Your car looks very aerodynamic, and I imagine it has to be to reach the speeds that it reaches and to handle the way it handles. Do you do a lot of wind tunnel testing, and how do you do that in the design?
Yeah, so originally we did a lot of wind tunnel testing, but nowadays we mostly do CFD,
okay.
And then we have our test track outside the factory, which used to be a runway. It's completely flat, and on the days in the summer, for example, when you have no wind, we do coast down tests. So you can see, get exact numbers of drag, and then we have strain gauges on the suspension arms to check for downforce or lift and things like that. So we get downforce, drag, and we get really good correlation to CFD. So basically it's more IRL than in real life than wind tunnel, and then you get all the aspects of rotating wheels, moving ground, things like that. So
it's pretty unbelievable.
But we have used wind tunnels in the past, but we just don't see a big need for it anymore.
Right. It's pretty amazing. Do you ever look back and pinch yourself now? You ever
sometimes,
stand there and look at the car and go, this is pretty amazing?
Sometimes, but not often enough. It's like always going forward, you know.
You got to think of the next thing. Yeah. I understand that. What's the next thing going to be?
You know, you have to enjoy. In the end, what you have is a journey. Yeah. The goal keeps on moving, and when you reach a goal, you just want to set out another one.
Sure.
So what you have is the journey. You have to enjoy it. And I'm reasonably good at that. I'm very satisfied through the journey, but maybe I should celebrate a little bit more often.
Perhaps. Definitely. Yeah. We all need to, right?
Yeah.
Do you love that the cars and video games and kids aspire to drive
I
the
think
car
that's fantastic. Yeah. I think so many more kids have driven Koenigseggs than adults through the video games, and they're just getting better and better, and they're getting better at representing the cars for what they are in reality. So that's also fun. And I think it's just fantastic. I mean, I get inspired by the fact that we also... That's where we get the bigger audience, right? Very few people can afford or buy our cars, but when they enter the video game platforms, everyone can enjoy them for a fraction of the cost and get inspired by them.
When you walk around the New York Auto Show, what... Do you have fun? You're a car guy at heart. Do you walk around and go, oh, I really like that car, this
Definitely.
Car?
Definitely.
Do you
Absolutely.
Get inspired?
I do. I look around.
Even from cars like Hondas behind us?
Yeah, could be. I mean, clever solutions are clever solutions. Interesting solutions are regardless of car type. So maybe more so from normal cars or concepts than
I love
sports
cars. I always find something redeeming about almost every car.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you have a car collection?
No. I have a car factory. I'm actually not good at collecting anything. I'm not a collector type.
Yeah.
And I probably wish I would be because it seems to be pretty lucrative, but I'm just not that type.
Who inspired you as a kid?
As a kid?
Yeah.
First thing that pops into mind is this bicycle repairman in the movie there, but Herbie maybe?
Sure. I loved Herbie.
It really gave the car a soul, I guess, that movie, right?
And who inspires you today?
Good question. I think what Elon Musk is doing is pretty exciting.
That is pretty exciting.
It shows that you can do anything, right?
Yeah.
Again.
That is, I mean, look, going to space.
Yeah, exactly.
Not Tesla and then going to space.
Right, absolutely.
It's unbelievable. And then what about Victor? You guys are good friends, huh? Spiker?
We've known each other for a long time.
Yeah.
And Victor is a really nice guy.
Yeah, he talks highly of you.
Well, I really like him too.
Yeah, I think that's interesting. And there's no friendly competition even. It's just an affinity for each other's
Absolutely.
Vehicles.
I mean, I appreciate what he does. I think he's got very interesting ideas and his cars are very unique, nothing else like him.
Well, same thing for yours.
Yeah, in a very different way.
So. Yes, absolutely. Very cool. Well, I really appreciate you coming on, Be Terrific, and spending time with us and sharing your story. It's a wonderful story.
Thank you.
I love
My
the
pleasure.
Cars. Great. I can't wait to see more, and I can't wait to do more with you. And I know the Terrifics enjoyed this tremendously. So on behalf of them, thank you.
Well, thank you.
You were great. That's Christian. I'm Michael, and we're going to take a quick break and be back with a whole lot more. Your live continuing coverage of the New York International Auto Show 2016 from the Jacob K. Javits Center in New York City from your official media partner, Be Terrific. Stay with us. Don't go anywhere. You are the Terrifics. You make Be Terrific special.